The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio. So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, M-E-E-audio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show. All right, I believe if I can find where the button went, this means we are live. We're doing it live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I take 1 week off and everything is calamity. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. Like, I came up with the list of topics that we can kind of loosely talk through. I'm not going to be super stressed about hitting every news link this week. And again, I put it out there in the tweet. I'm just kind of feeling like with the Apple announcement being tomorrow and my show being today, there's definitely some stuff I want to cover, but we can make this a more casual Q&A chat. You know, we don't have to make this quite so regimented and same structure of a podcast. So I'm chill. I've got the list all set up. I've got the blog post ready to publish when the show's done, you know, for the replay crew. I'm kind of poking around. I pour a cup of coffee. Like, oh, you know what? I need to get water. Run downstairs, get water. Oh, yeah, I wanted to read up on this one other thing. Check it out. I'm getting ready to push go. And you know, I give myself that 5 minute window, and I'm so glad I did, because I had not put together a thumbnail. I had not activated the right mic. So that's why I'm not using my broadcast mic. My interface is plugged in with is plugged in for audio testing. So scrambled and put this on. Literally in 3 minutes, I put together most of the show that normally happens like a half hour before actually jump in. So I do want to highlight a few folks here. 2Turbo, subscribing tier one. They've been subscribed for 3 months now. 2Turbo, I greatly appreciate it. First time chat, Steve Litchfield. Hey, JCB, can't stay for the live stream as I have to cook tea for the family. So I'm just saying hello. I'll catch up later if I can. Steve, thanks so much for just popping in and saying hey. And everyone needs to be catching the phone show. Again, Steve, legit. OG of sort of productivity and getting more out of our mobile devices, actually running a YouTube channel almost exclusively off of like selfie cameras and stuff. I mean, it's just phenomenal commentary. I can't thank Steve enough for jumping in. TK Bay, wishing everyone a good morning. And Dave Burns, highlighting this comment, how passive aggressive will tomorrow's Apple announcement be, some gadget guy? I don't know. So I have so much editing to do, and I am way behind on three videos that I'm trying to wrap up before a whole onslaught of new phones actually arrive here. So I'm thinking I'm probably not going to do anything heavy reaction-wise. I was thinking of putting out a short after the Apple announcement just to kind of reinforce, like, I'm not going to be reviewing any Apple gear until we hear unequivocally that Apple is going to get rid of device scanning. So I might try to live tweet through their announcement if that's something y'all are down for and you want to meet up on the Twitters, then maybe I could be motivated to pull myself away from Resolve for an hour or so, but let me know. I'm not trying to be the Apple hater. I'm actually really disappointed because this was my year, my on-off cycle, to jump heavy on iPhone coverage. I try to skip years, and so it got weird after I left Pocket now, and then the iPhone X came out, and then the XS hit, that I went XS and 11, and I skipped the 12 because I didn't really feel it was that substantial an upgrade. I feel like you maximize your Apple conversation every other year, and this was the year I was really planning on doing that. And again, as I look at, really trying to keep my budget in check for how we buy review devices, and there are some things at the end of the year that I'm really hoping I can sink my teeth into, things like Steam Deck. I was being very conservative about how I was going to purchase stuff. So instead of an iPhone, I'm looking at anything else. Like if you go to Swappa, you can find new in-box Z Flip 3s for like, what, $790, $800? I might jump on one of those instead and just spend a little quality time with the folding phone. So again, this is all rambling and this is going to be a rambling podcast, but I'll be curious if people have thoughts. And again, I'm kind of trying to go where we want to have the chat. And this year, the iPhone chat, if we're already talking about next year's iPhone, I feel like this is an S year in disregarding the product even before it's launched. So I feel like consumers who are looking to upgrade are probably already they've already allocated their money. Like they're not looking for reviews or something's not really going to sway their opinions on what iPhones to buy. They're already dedicating their resources. And techies are kind of already over this conversation before it's even started. So we'll have to see how that goes. But of course, this is our Monday morning show. We like to start off our week, have a great hangout here. And like I said, so many wonderful faces and usernames and stuff. Aditya, Fat Produce, Gary the Fireman, Awesome Possum, Dave Burns. First time chat from Russ 9123. Hope everyone had a great day. I hope so too, man. Again, my day's just getting started, so I can't talk about it in the past tense. Yes, yet, because I almost cratered the whole show before it started. We got Sam in here. Simon says Hypno, Streamy Boys, Billy Quiz, Irk Eyes TV, El Jefe Reviews. El Jefe was a significant contributor to the Best of Our Week, the podcast me and TK host every week, which we'll probably dig into more Apple stuff on that podcast on Thursday. But Jeff hooked up a couple last tracks for our challenge playlist where we talked about different DACs and amps and stuff. And again, it's just really great to be able to have those folks that we can kind of collab with and have these conversations with. Paul Puri is not here. So no one look for Paul, especially in the chat, because he is most sneaky. So I hope everyone had a great weekend. It was a nice, felt like normal family weekend for us. We're still very anxious about how we're going out and how we're staging activities, what kind of things we're doing with Lex because she can't get vaccinated yet. But yesterday was her very first Soccer Stars soccer lesson. So she met up with Coach Jake, and Coach Jake ran her through drills. It was a very, very small group. It was three kids in total. Masks were required because of their ages, even though they were outside. And it was really kind of wonderful. The background, because I don't share much I don't share almost any, I share rarely any photos or videos of Lex. Like, one of my favorite things to do with my daughter is like just go hit a grassy field in a park and kick a soccer ball around. And even for a 5-year-old, you know, like if I just want to talk to her, there's like, I get a better conversation when we're sort of occupied by just passing the ball back and forth, you know, like playing catch, you know, like that. It's such a stereotypical dad thing to do. But it's real, you know, like if I were just to sit down in front of a table and like, tell me about your day, she would just like shut down. But I put a soccer ball in front of her and she's kind of just whipping the ball back and forth. And she's got a pretty mean kick off her right foot for an almost 6-year-old. So it was really heartening to see her interact with a different soccer coach who had never met her before. They'd never, you know, like been, you know, seen each other in person before. And he passes her the ball and she just boots it. He wasn't like quite ready for it, but he still intercepted the ball. He's like, "Hey, that was a good pass, Lexi." You're like, "All right, I have done my due diligence. I have been good dad in instructing my daughter." So it was a really nice way to kind of spend some family time out at a park. There was some good shade because it was in the high 90s out here when we had her for a soccer lesson. And that she was interacting well with the other kids too. So it was hilarious, of course, like 3 6-year-olds all magnet ball, you know, like, "Hey, you know, pass it back and forth between each other." And instead they're like all trying to keep it. So it was pretty awesome. Again, those like family and dad moments. I'm hoping that those of you out there in podcast land are also hopefully finding those opportunities, because they've been in short supply lately, and it's so refreshing. It really is. Like, we walked away from an hour-long soccer lesson just feeling like we met other parents and we talked to a soccer coach. There were conversations about schools, and like we went out and got coffee, and it just felt so normal. And it felt so normal for the first time in a really long time. DTNL, Lex is already more talented than I am. He also says you're good parents, Juan, and she's a great kid. She's an amazing kid. I feel like she makes me look like a better parent than I probably deserve to be. Or deserve to look. She's awesome. I'm very proud of my daughter. So we've got a really loose structure on the show. If I hadn't already made that clear, and again, even from just taking 1 week off, my normal pattern flow is a little off. So, you know. I still want to loosely break up news and news and gadget block. So we'll get a little housekeeping out of the way. There are some news links that I think we should cover, but almost all of these are the continuing sort of follow-up conversations. So I kind of just want to hit them, and I hope that you'll go and read up a little bit more on what's going down with these stories, because none of them are to completion yet, and a lot of them are better explained than me just kind of rambling through a synopsis of the story. So, of course, everything that we're going to be talking about, the housekeeping, the news links, the gadget blog, all of those links will be available in the show notes on somegadgetguide.com. And I always put that as part of the pattern. This week, I'm really hoping that you will try to look up more info on each of these stories. We're finding some of these tipping points where legal proceedings are leading us to some stark transitions in how we do business with mega corporations. State government agencies are starting to get more involved in the conversation on digital commerce. None of this is black or white, left or right, right or wrong. We're rapidly approaching some tension points that will be worked out in our society, and these are the steps that are leading us to some of those transition points. And I find this, like, living through history kind of fascinating. So, let me get this out of the way. Why don't we knock out housekeeping real quick, because it's funny to bring it up because I didn't do a podcast last week. So I went scrolling back through, like, did I put out a lot of stuff last? Oh no, this is 2 weeks worth of posts on somecatchitguy.com. Simon says Hypno says 13 minutes. I'm only doing synopses. I'm not going to do the explanation of the post that and you can read it. Here's the rundown from 2 weeks of posting on somegadgetguide.com. It's 9:14 in the AM here in Southern California. All right. First up, AirPro 2 from Earfun. The most fun your ears can have for under $80. And if you hit the coupon code, these are true wireless earbuds with wireless charging in the case, a phenomenal ambient mode, active noise cancellation, and you can get them stupid cheap. Then I wrote a couple editorials over these last 2 weeks. This one is, I did actually shoot a video on. It's called Why is the Pixel 5a Camera So Good? It's not what you think. Clickbait tease. Oh ho! Explained. No, seriously, there are very good reasons why I feel the Pixel 5a camera deserves a lot more attention, and almost none of it has to do with HDR or photo post-processing. LFA reviews. It's like fun, but for your ears. That is absolutely true, because Earfun is amazing. Now, this is a near and dear editorial to my heart, how techies get phone camera reviews wrong. Years back, I wrote an editorial about how tech reviewers get audio reviewing wrong. That was written back almost before the launch of the V40, so I was focusing on the LG V30 at the time. And again, there's a lot of techie gobbledygook and sort of spec speech, and then they can't really demonstrate anything about what they're talking about. And it makes me very sad, because reviewers should still be educators. But instead, they kind of just fall into these lazy truisms based on sort of the popularity of the topic. So if it's a popular phone, it gets a good review. And if it's a less popular phone, well, less people are buying it, so it's not as good. And that's crap. So if you want my full breakdown, where I even included sensor math, all right? I mean, like, you want to talk about not showing your work in an opinion piece, I broke down the actual sensor dimensions, sizes, relative surface area, compared against different phones. Some phones got pooped on, some phones were praised for being better hardware, and all of that's basically bunk. Basically, every tech reviewer got that wrong, but me, because I'm awesome sauce. So, moving right along, I got to spend some time with some audio smart glasses. Not the Ray-Bans, not from Facebook. I'm not going to be purchasing those, or I probably won't be reviewing them. These are the View Light Smart Glasses, just some audio frames, ultra light. I mean, just some of the lightest smart techie stuff that you can wear on your face. And then another audio kit, the Olive Pro. These are hearables, so they look a little like AirPods Pro, true wireless earbuds, but the whole point is to amplify important sounds and then use noise reduction to cancel out noise around you so that you can hear around you better. And again, it's a product category that's near and dear to my heart. As more people are facing hearing loss, it's kind of critical to find some products that can help minimize the effects of hearing loss. And then just wrapping up another run of audio commentary, I put out a video, What I Mean When I Talk About Weak Headphone Amps on Phones. And this one, you know, again, I'm highlighting a phone that I absolutely love. I mean, this is the Xperia 1 Mark II. But just trying to show, I'm so tired of these sort of wishy-washy feelers that people talk about in terms of tech. Now, there is obviously an emotional component to a tech review, but there should also be a technical component, and you should show your work. And so I'm showing my work, like showing you what it is that I do to test, to process, to analyze, and compare. And that's why I'm making statements like, oh, the DAC is incredible, but the amp is going to be a problem, or something like that. You know, again, we can break up these conversations. And so that is a video behind the scenes, you know, of how I get my work done. And Fat Produce dropping off tier one subs to Treats and Milk 2, Raymondit, Rico Man, Lanny 82, and Sam 20 Miles. Andrew, thank you so much, man. That's really awesome of you. And again, it's I always greatly appreciate those out there supporting production on these various channels. Lungan Man is gifting a tier one sub to Jab Grace. Look at you two. Well, thank you so much. Apparently a hype train is close. Sub, gift, or use bits now to start a hype train. I'm going to keep going on with my show because we're almost done with housekeeping, and this is going to be maybe the fastest I've ever gotten through housekeeping. So I'm going to keep my eye on that prize. But thank you all so much. I very much appreciate all of the support and all of the contributions to keeping these conversations rolling. Last bits of housekeeping here. TK and I did a remote podcast last Thursday where Best of Our Week, episode 36, we talked a little bit more about the Pixel 6. We wrapped up our audio showdown comparing the THX Onyx versus the Helm Bolt USB dongle DAX. And then I also mentioned, you know, I chatted about some of the Olive Pro and the View glasses. And it was, again, another way to kind of feel normal. Like, me and my buddy are out at a park and we're just hanging out and having this chat. And those moments have been less common. So we probably weren't as good with the chat. Again, when TK and I just kind of get chatting between ourselves, we're really just two friends catching up. That is genuine. That is honest. So we're not always quite as good at, you know, making it through the chat to highlight comments and answer questions and stuff. Even less so when we're out at a park. But I still feel like if you wanted that kind of organic friend conversation, that one was legit. It was honest. And then on top of that, I feel I have earned a reputation for being very cranky about Samsung. And when we talk in general consumer tech or smartphone conversations, you know, average consumer kind of stuff, I have been critically disappointed in the Galaxy S series. I'm heartbroken that we're not getting another Note. The Active line was one of my core, most anticipated product launches every year. And the foldables aren't doing it for me personally as like real options to recommend to people. Like, they're techie and cool from like the perspective of, you know, fashion and style and engineering and design. But I know nobody in my circles of family and friends that I would genuinely recommend one of those phones to. But I feel like my commentary on things like Galaxy A series is often overlooked. I feel like my love of additional functionality and features like DeX is often overlooked. So the moderators at our Samsung DeX reached out to me. So this is a subreddit all about people who use Samsung DeX. They know I'm, you know, I was like an LG guy, but I've reviewed laptop docs and they wanted to kind of pick my brain about why I make the choices that I do. And so I joined their podcast, Let's Chat DeX. This actually recorded early Sunday morning. I think this was a pretty good conversation, even though I was barely into my first cup of coffee and I was definitely groggy for like the first couple minutes. But, you know, kind of digging a little bit deeper into the philosophy of not just using your phone for more, you know, just not just trying to get more gadget bang for buck, but then also like, how do we support these initiatives and how do we improve the visibility of them? Because I kind of feel like DeX's days are likely numbered. If the Z Flip 3 makes Samsung a lot of money and it doesn't have DeX, then that's kind of evidence that they don't need to keep including those types of features on future devices. So it's like an hour and a half real conversation, but just with some additional padding on me being a bit groggy. But now, wow, am I going to clear my throat right in front of the microphone here? Hype train level 5. So first, Paul Purry, rocking my socks here. Paul just gifted tier one subs to DSO Thorn and Murchu, Gabaletta, Thur Carl, Steve Boland, Tiger Chem, Nomad, Aussie Beach Bum, Anderspand, Fui Ka. He's like, I need them sweet hype train emotes. Also, tier one subs to Mark Hod and Doomer. And then, not to be outdone, Fab Produce dropping off another tier one sub to Blue Malicious. That is amazing. That is absolutely incredible. I can't thank y'all enough. That is so, so cool. So level five hype train. Apparently there's like another minute 40 on this hype train, but already that's amazing, and thank you so much. And again, the support has been incredible, and I love all your faces. So that's housekeeping. And I got that done in just under 10 minutes with a couple plugs for Hype Train and Tier 1 subs. I feel like this is the most accomplished, the best I've ever done with housekeeping. So like I said, everything that we're going to be talking about, everything that we're going to be sharing from the news, from the housekeeping, from the gadget blog, everything's going to be available for the show notes on this episode, somegadgetguide.com. Ooh, Paul Purry, 20% off all subs today. Gonna leave on that discount. Hype train! Thank you again, Paul. That's amazing. Fat Produce. I'm not sure how the hype train works, but when I see a percentage, I want it to reach 100. So yeah, that's incredible. We hit 100% on level 5. I don't know what that means, but it sounds really cool. So, Simon says, Hypno, when you want to go from beginner to pro, you do your housekeeping. And everyone say hey to Tech Loving Mama in the chat right now, giving us a wave, giving us a little heart emoji, and TLM is good time. So level 4 hype train emote, choo choo. Choo-choo. I love it. This is not even my final hype train form. I love it. You guys are awesome. Okay, news block. I said I do want to get through this pretty quick. So many of these are follow-up or keep an eye on kinds of stories. The first one actually relates to what we just experienced here today. I don't know that I've ever had a serious raid on my channel. It sounds cool in theory, but it is kind of becoming a problematic interaction the way that Twitch has built it for their platform. So much so, this is the first story coming by way of Wired. Who wrote this up? Oh, Cecilia D'Anastasio. Wow, I could not say that name. Raids have become so problematic, Twitch is now suing users over alleged hate raids against streamers. So a streamer starts something on their channel, someone raids that channel, and then a whole flock of bots magnify that channel, that raid. And it's gotten so out of control that beyond just utilizing their own tools through their own terms of service, we're actually now looking at lawsuits. Twitch is going to start suing individual users to then also try and break down and get the legal disclosures on who is implementing this policy, who is implementing the strategy and how these bots are being formed and who's creating these bots. They're going to try and start breaking down kind of the mechanisms of when a raid goes hateful. So this is very early. You know, we're talking about the beginnings of these lawsuits, so this is absolutely something to keep an eye on, how an organization like Twitch, under the umbrella of Amazon, is going to start utilizing the legal system, not their own internal mechanisms, but the legal system, a government's legal system, to try and facilitate policy on their platform. And I'm really struggling to think if anyone has an idea on when something like that has happened in the past, because this to me feels like something new. This feels like something different. It's different than like, you know, like in the early days of like Napster, you know, music labels sued Napster and they sued the fans, but they weren't responsible for the platform of Napster. YouTube sort of abdicated their responsibilities on copyright by creating mechanisms where rights holders could go and like use YouTube's policies of striking channels or taking their monetization to protect their copyright. I can't think of a situation in the past where a platform has sued their own users to protect the structure of their platform. So this is absolutely one I think we need to keep an eye on, because this is how we interact with laws, with governments, and how mega corporations actually do implement policy for their users on that platform. This to me is like crazy. I've never seen anything quite like this before. From Gormlord, what exactly is a Twitch raid? So as far as I understand it, because I am bad at the Twitch, it is a way for you to take your audience, like let's say you've got a certain number of followers, and then point them to go and experience someone else's stream. And often, or I believe the original intention of that was to help a larger Twitch streamer, or even, you know, a smaller Twitch streamer, I guess, but to kind of share some love, you know, like I'm going to point people who watch my stuff over to someone else's stream, and maybe it's a smaller stream and we can kind of build up their numbers. Or maybe I've got a smaller Twitch channel, but I want to go and show support for one of my favorite larger streamers, and we're all just going to go head over there together. It's a, you know, community and kind of stapling those communities together. Because of the nature of online douchebaggery, this type of tool is now being utilized to kind of try and crush channels that people don't like. So it's an ugly look for Twitch, because they're trying to implement community policy that makes Twitch kind of a nicer place to be, and their tools are now being used against the actual platform. So it's heavy stuff for Twitch that I don't fully understand, because I don't think it's ever really happened to me, so I don't know what it looks like. I still have not implemented any of those emotes or like reward bells or any of the other fun things that you can do on Twitch. I'm still bad at the Twitch, so I don't know how far or how deep, you know, this notion of raids and stuff goes. It's a step beyond me. Excuse me. All right, moving right along to another story we just need to keep aware of, because I feel like this is going to be a brutal state government legal showdown, where California has now passed a bill that might improve conditions for Amazon's warehouse workers. This is written up by Mariella Moon on Engadget. AB 701 will force companies to be transparent about their quotas. And basically, this is a bill that is going to try and regulate how a corporation or a warehouser or a staffer like Amazon uses algorithms to vet the productivity of their employees. And it's very likely, if it's passed, first of all, we haven't seen the governor sign off on this bill yet, but we're going to have to see how this is implemented, what the regulatory aspects of this will be, like how is it going to be monitored? You know, how do they investigate claims of abuse? But this is a rough one for Amazon because of the way that they utilize human labor in their warehousing and their shipping and distribution strategies. And California is a humongous market. The reason why this is also sort of historically contentious is because of the way that California in the past has enacted policy that This is very broad. I mean, whatever they talk about here could technically apply to IKEA. It could technically apply to Best Buy. It's sort of broad enough that it could be any major corporation that stocks product and ships product, and they can kind of point this at other organizations. But we're also pretty clear that the inception of this idea was targeted at Amazon. And a long time ago, are we getting on like 10 years now? I want to say it was right after the writer's strike in 2007, 2008. So maybe even longer than 10 years. I am old. There was a showdown on tax policy between the state of California and Amazon, where because of that, Amazon actually pulled the affiliate program. And so people like me, at the time, I was making a lot of money on Amazon affiliate links. All of that just vanished. I mean, it just disappeared. And it was like Amazon went out of their way to punish people living in California to put pressure on the California government to enact better policy for Amazon's tax status. And I mean, in a way, it did work. It took like over a year to wrangle all that out. But in that interim, I never went back to really relying on Amazon affiliate links like I used to before then. I mean, I still host them. I'm very passive with them. I'm not constantly trying to, put out sales and tweet links. And if there's a link under my video description and maybe on the blog post, and that's about it. It's not a significant part of my income anymore because I don't trust that Amazon won't use me as leverage against a state government. So here, I'm curious to see what the fallout will be if this bill goes into effect and Amazon has to start better accounting for how they work their human labor and people can put in more direct complaints against the company. So it could be a nothing burger, or it could be an epic legal showdown between a massive corporation in the state of California.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Oh, Otaku. I mean, we're literally on Twitch, so I don't know if this will get me in trouble. Will Amazon ever do something that isn't dystopian nightmare fuel when workers are treated like garbage? Tune in next year to find out. Spoiler alert, the answer is no. I feel like Amazon is going to be a nimble and fluid enough company that if complaints get racked up, they will pivot onto other internal policy that will satisfy the legal letter of this law while then also still maintaining a certain aspect of human productivity. I feel like we're in for a cat and mouse game. How do we regulate massive corporations? And our legal system has not figured this out. So it's pretty heady stuff. It's really intense. Paul Puri, this video is sponsored by Amazon Prime. I'm not I wish I was getting that tasty Amazon cash. I am not. Again, even on Twitch, I had a couple legally private interactions with Amazon that I can't really discuss. So moving right along, another bad look. Just a really bad look for a major, massive, like, infrastructure data corporation. This one came in, I think Dave was the first to send it my way. Here, let me click this over.
Google illegally underpaid thousands of workers across dozens of countries, written up by Julia Wong on The Guardian. And this is another one that this is a story that deserves examination, some kind of investigation, and potentially a day in court. Documents show company dragged feet to correct disparity after learning it was failing to comply with laws in the UK, Europe, and Asia. Google has been illegally underpaying thousands of temporary workers in dozens of countries and delayed correcting the pay rates for more than 2 years as it attempted to cover up the problem, The Guardian can reveal. So this is an ongoing investigative journalism piece, and now it's going to start filtering through numerous courts of law in countries around the globe. And again, I just feel we're coming to one of those tension points. How does a company interact with its employees? And now that the employees can be further encouraged to share stories internally about what it's like to work at that company. And even people with relatively small megaphones can find ways of amplifying their experiences, and governments have more data to go into the particulars of how a company operates. And so again, going from Amazon to Google, we're going to have the major news block story is obviously Apple and Epic. Governments are starting. What's sad is that they're only just starting, but they're starting to get just a bit savvier about how certain members of their regulatory agencies can dig into the information that's provided by these massive corporations. Google is huge. And so again, it's not Google is one thing. Google is an almost dystopian spread of tiny little divisions and factions and different groups internal to this huge umbrella. And some of the factions are doing things that I think are really cool. Some of the factions are doing things I think are really concerning. And some of the factions are just bureaucracy in its purest form, trying to wrangle an amoeba that spreads the globe of search and data and traffic and organization. And so I always think stories like this are interesting. And these are the stories to follow up on and to keep an eye on, because how we handle Google, which is a subdivision of Alphabet, will enact the next three generations of corporate law. Every single tiny legal dispute that happens between a country and an organization like Alphabet is going to be legal precedent for the next 20 years of how laws are crafted around this type of business practice. I mean, again, living through this as history is just absolutely fascinating to me. Here we go. From Paul, Google stated the incorrect pay rates were due to a clerical error caused by internal confusion caused by the multitude of chat apps. We didn't know why there were so many, states manager. Oh, and from JJ, I think we're coming back to relearning this. Didn't we learn anything from Standard Oil and Trust Buster Teddy Roosevelt? I feel like there are some very interesting conversations happening, which aren't just one side of the political aisle. Again, it's really fascinating to me how, from a political standpoint, almost everybody, left or right, leaves the table feeling like their side was grievously wronged when it comes to discussing the operations of Facebook, of Twitter, of Google, of these massive corporations, especially the more data-driven corporations. It's very interesting to me how, like, everyone thinks they're the ones that are being harmed by their business practices. And that idea is slowly steamrolling into a different kind of conversation where both conservatives and liberals are talking about different versions of things like divestiture, you know, breaking these companies up or trying to acquire parts of these companies for like public infrastructure. Absolutely fascinating. I mean, it is, you know, tech is politics. It is like how we operate at the most, you know, at the smallest daily level to the grandest overall sort of society design. It's incredible stuff. And these types of moments are the tiny little like TikToks on the clock that will then all be kind of combined together to kind of reform our idea of where we all fit in this giant machine. Dave Burns, who knew that monopolies are hugely unpopular? Well, speaking of monopolies, apparently Apple is not one. Reuters has two back-to-back they published two articles back-to-back on the Apple lawsuit against Epic, or the Epic lawsuit against Apple, and the claims made by Epic about Apple being a monopoly and how Apple is engaged in anti-consumer behavior. And the judge has just issued a verdict on this first lawsuit. And of course, we've seen both companies immediately appeal. Excuse me. Sorry, I chugged way too much coffee this morning. So drinking little bits of water throughout this, I'm probably going to have the burps. Super gross. From Reuters, Apple must ease App Store rules, U.S. judge orders. This was written up by Stephen Nellis at Reuters. And this is a great breakdown on what happened over the course of this lawsuit and breaking it down. Actually, you know, just the TLDR. I still want you to kind of read through all of this because the nuance matters. The little push and pull and how ridiculous so many of Apple's claims were. Tim Cook under oath got grilled to such a degree that he kind of again had to contradict himself during cross-examination and even during direct questioning from the judge in this case. I bring it up a lot, but we talked about that early conversation where Apple, Google, Amazon, and Facebook had to testify before a Senate Judiciary Committee. And Tim Cook made this broad statement about how all developers are equal and Apple treats everyone the same. It's just not in our DNA to discriminate. And then immediately was asked a question point blank, which caused him to have to refine what he said. But don't some developers get like special, you know, criteria? Oh, well, yes, of course, some developers do get different things on our platform. After almost immediately having said, all developers are equal. It was such a George Orwell Animal Farm. All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. You know, like, how can you not be prepared under oath to not step in a trap like that? And apparently he kind of did the same thing here, like, early on in his testimony, talking about how, we turned the place upside down to cater to the developers, and then later had to admit, like, yeah, I don't get regular briefs on how developers feel about the App Store, so I don't really know what's going on there. And then earlier in the trial, Schiller was asked, like, well, how much money does the App Store bring in? He's like, you know, I don't even really look at it that way. You know, like, here's one of Apple's top executives claiming to not know how much money the App Store generates. For Schiller, I mean, it's just all about the feels, man. All I care about is that it's groovy, dude. BS. Again, it makes Apple look like such a joke of an organization if their executives are actually trying to claim under oath that they just don't know what's up. You know, this is news to me. I haven't heard any complaints about the App Store. My phone never lags. You're probably just holding it wrong. But legally. So what's hilarious here is Epic is also immediately jumping into appeals because the judge also did say that they did owe Apple damages for how they did business under the terms of service of how they enacted Fortnite, how they tried to implement payment systems on Fortnite, and how they engaged in the commentary and the operation of sort of trying to gin up the controversy around Apple. So they're trying to say, no, we don't have to pay these damages to Apple. And Apple is, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, because the main aspect of this lawsuit, I'm sorry, I totally buried the lead. The judge is now saying Apple has to allow for other payment services to be featured in apps on iOS and the iPad and iPadOS. So Apple can no longer punish developers if they want to put a different button to say, hey, you can pay through your App Store account, your Apple ID, or you can push this button and you can Venmo me, or you can PayPal me, or however you would like to do business with me, you can also go through this other button, and that won't take a 30% cut of my revenue. So of course, Apple is very upset about that, because contrary to the under oath testimonies of their executives, the App Store brings in a ridiculous amount of money for Apple to do very little other than just facilitate the stocking of apps. Again, like, Apple contributes very little to the relationship between a developer and an end iPhone user other than just existing in between them. Now, I know the App Store is supposed to be this place where you can protect against malware, and they have to approve these different apps, and I get it. It's a walled garden. But beyond that, a 30% cut for very little other than just existing to keep the walls up is a bit much. I think that's a lot. So it's hilarious. Like, again, both Apple and Epic making a lot of noise about, hey, we don't think this is right. We're going to be appealing this decision, obviously. but from this ruling, Apple was not declared a monopoly, but that this practice of preventing developers from utilizing third-party payments was deemed anti-competitive. So now the statement is ruling against Apple for that, and then saying Epic does owe Apple some damages. So yeah, this one is amazing. I mean, it really is. This is an what came out of this lawsuit. The inside look we got at Apple finally kind of chipped away at some of that beautifully manicured PR image of what Apple has crafted over generations of consumers. And it definitely brought in that look of, you know, Apple is a corporation like any other. There's nothing magic about that. They're not altruistic. They're not in this for anything other than what every other corporation hopes to achieve, is generating more profits for shareholders. And again, that's not to say, like, oh, hate on Apple, don't do business with them. I'm choosing not to because of their policy on right to repair and on-device scanning. But again, I feel like wrapping up so much of, like, your fashion sense or your identity into one massive corporation is probably not healthy. And any opportunity we can have to just take a half step back and say, hey, that's kind of scummy, probably be pretty good for all of us. The other follow-up on this, Reuters also published this great kind of fact sheet. So this will also be on the show notes. This is just the collected link list from Reuters on the Apple versus Epic case. And a lot of these little anecdotes, how the arguments from Epic, how the experts debated different aspects of what a monopoly might be. Apple made at least $100 million while Fortnite was still on the iPhone because of this commission that you have to pay, while also expressing that they can't tell you how much money their App Store makes. Tim Cook getting frazzled. Gamers complaining about other platforms that have been denied to iPhone users because of Apple's policy. Things like Game Pass from Microsoft or Stadia, xCloud, these other services, Nvidia. Oh, no, you can't have another competing app store on our phones. So you can't have that unless you also put every single game individually on our app store, which is pants on head stupid. But at the same time, it was because Apple was trying to make their own game subscription, which also still hasn't gotten good. I don't know. It's so funny to me, the credit that Apple gets. You know, they have the good software and the ecosystem. And then you look at a service like their game subscription, and you're like, this is garbage. This is so bad. Why would you want to use that instead of something like Game Pass? Because I, again, not sitting here shilling for Microsoft, but Game Pass is an incredible bargain for a game library with some of the features of like a Netflix streaming. Just awesome. So the Apple Epic lawsuit was epic, was phenomenal. This is like the best entertainment I've had in tech legal space in a really long time. So definitely check out those links from Reuters too. The breakdown, just kind of the individual, some of the bullet points, some of the back and forth between these two corporations, and then their write-ups on the verdict. Excellent. Excellent work, just kind of keeping up with what they're doing. Sorry, Dave, that is a very good point. Because some news publications are now moving to like paywalls and stuff. These from Reuters are free to read. You don't have to have a subscription or be paying for anything. You can jump on those articles. Good finds, David. Good finds. And Aditya is telling me to check my posture and to stretch. So I will do that as we go into a quick plug. Oh, gross. My entire spine just rippled. Ooh, I just popped my sternum too. I wonder how that's going to sound on this little chest mic. Probably really gross. Apologies to anyone listening on the audio version of this podcast. I had a pretty good week on the subreddit. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. We are now closing in on, we're 1,978 members strong, getting even closer to 2,000 followers on this subreddit. The whole point of Glowing Rectangles is to try and share content that we feel deserves more attention. Doesn't necessarily need to be from a smaller creator or medium-sized channel, someone just getting started. We can highlight work from much larger publications and organizations, but the goal isn't just to hype train something that's already popular. It's to share something that we feel deserves more attention. Let's say there was a really great nuts and bolts help and how-to article on Engadget, and it really didn't seem to be getting any traction or any comments. That is our mission. Bring me that article, share it on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I know Streamy Boys is all about a pizza party, so I'm not sure how to facilitate that other than to say, go buy some pizza and we'll all eat it together. I mean, we could do that, but I was thinking more of like a Reddit specific live stream or something. You know, maybe have like a little round table of guests, but built specifically for the subreddit. Like what I would maybe do is make it an unlisted video on my channel. And then it would just live on the subreddit and we could all like hang out and chat and it can be kind of goofy. I don't know, just spitballing some ideas, but I want to hear from everyone in the chat. And then also hit me up if you're catching this on the replay crew. What should we do? I want to celebrate this. I missed 1,000 subscribers, 1,000 members. I want to do something fun for 2,000, and we're only 22 subscriptions away. So if you're out there sharing, we could probably make up 22 members really fast. I mean, like, if you're supporting this idea and this initiative, and you're trying to promote people that you care about and the content that you like to watch. So anyway, I had a good week. My amp video, my headphone amp video, was the number one, and how techies get camera reviews wrong was number two. My View Light was number four, but it's the number three story and the number five story that I would like to highlight, because these have been ongoing conversations in the creator space. So the number three story on Glowing Rectangles this week came by way of Alt Dad Tech, 5,200 subscribers. He's doing amazing commentary work, and he's super cranky like I am. So you definitely know I like his style of cranky, rambling, ranty videos. But, sorry, it was just my voice kind of closed up there. Alt Dad is taking a responder to the collab video from Mr. Who's the Boss and MKBHD. A number of the points he brings up in that video are going to be familiar because they're the kinds of editorials that I've written about how rigged the review space is currently for popularity. This is the stuff that gets me mocked on our Android. It's why everyone seems to think that I'm some kind of hater. I was a shill for LG, because let me tell you, being a shill for LG makes you no money. Like, none when we're talking about producing videos. But that must be what it is because of reasons. Increasingly, I have found the color and the tone of the conversation coming from a number of larger creators and reviewers is starting to get a little defensive. It is not because of me. I really do feel it is because of the ongoing ebb and flow of tech enthusiasts leaving the tech conversation space because the quality of the conversation is dropping. The quality of the conversation is becoming very shallow, is focusing more on riding the hype train, and is sort of leaning into the preference of pretty video production over more insightful commentary. You can give me really juicy, crispy B-roll, and you just read the specs off at me, and you sort of validate the pre-confirmed bias of an audience, then that's all you need to do to be successful. And I feel like that's worked for a really long time, but it's sort of driven out the nuts and bolts techies, and it really hasn't brought new consumers into our ranks. In fact, it increasingly drives out the average consumers because they're not getting anything insightful. They're not being educated, they're not being informed, and they're increasingly being shown ridiculously expensive consumer electronics talked about as if they are the foregone conclusion options for average consumers. As soon as you hear folding phone and, well, what average people are going to do on it, you've lost the plot. You are so far off the pulse, bad metaphor about trying to find the pulse. I mean, you're actually, you know, manhandling a cantaloupe. You know, like, I don't know how to make that joke land. So Alt Dad Tech took a moment to respond. And I feel like a number of his criticisms, and I feel a number of his a significant amount of his commentary is on point. When you've got two of the largest channels on YouTube popularizing a certain flavor of consumer electronics conversation, but then claiming to be the victims of this system, it reads as disingenuous. It reads incomplete. It doesn't seem like an honest assessment of how they, with these massive channels, this huge reach, and all of this influence that they can deliver, would really have to be the victims of the things that they're complaining about. And I very much bristle at any of the conversations where we, and I'm including myself in this, we in the tech space conflate YouTube reviewing with journalism. I cannot call myself a journalist. I think it is a massive conflict of journalistic integrity to participate with things like embargoes or do sponsored videos or get early access and call myself a journalist. I have lost journalistic objectivity if I am engaging in those business practices. And unfortunately, that means I have to call myself something else. I almost always try to affix the adjective of YouTube reviewer, or I hate that I am one, but technically I would be more in line with being an influencer than any kind of reporter. A reporter by their very nature, should never be in a position where they have to manicure the quality of their investigative reporting to abide by a legal and binding contract which dictates what they can and can't talk about at certain distribution and release dates. I feel that is a conflict of interest, especially when early access means more views, which is a financial benefit. I'm not getting paid for this early embargo review, BS you are. Every time your video does well, your views go up, you can charge more for sponsorships and for product placement, you get more ad revenue if you're engaged with ad revenue on YouTube's platform. Early access is a financial perk. Trying to act like it's not is a lie. That is intellectually dishonest and would really, to me, call into question the character of that individual who is playing a lie of omission game on what it is that motivates their business practices. It's fine if you're like, well, no one sponsored me to talk about this video, or talk about this product in this video. There's a full list of all my disclosures on my website. Cool. But if you're trying to pretend that being on the early list of publications for embargoes isn't a financial benefit, then that is a lie of omission. So, AltAdTech has a great look at this. The other person that also I feel put out a really solid video on this is Painfully Honest Tech, Jason. Also had a great breakdown and a little bit more of a structured reaction where he was pulling in clips of the MKBHD and Mr. Who's the Boss video and directly pointing out, like, you're not victims of this if you're complicit in it. And they have channels that are large enough for them to set the tone of their commentary and to walk away from the very things that they're claiming are so problematic about tech. So to me, this definitely speaks of that transition point in tech enthusiasm, in tech commentary. The review space is not fun like it used to be. I'm sure even at the top tier, these channels are watching the effectiveness of their strategy start to diminish. I would imagine they're likely not bringing in as much money per video product, time spent working, yada, 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 SEO, ROI. And they're looking at ways that they can kind of adapt or address some of these concerns in their communities. But the effort of putting out a video like this, I think, is an insufficient explanation for how they do business and how they generate income. So, good work, AltAdTech and Jason, Painfully Honest Tech. Really good stuff. And again, these are the kinds of clearing the air. I was reluctant to get into this even as much as I just did here in the subreddit plug, because it's a very sick feeling. I do not like making a tech channel into a tech drama channel. I had that kind of sort of meltdown moment where I had to address that Austin Evans video. And that is still like the all-time most viewed article on my channel. I just recently published that how techies get camera reviews wrong. I have a call out against The Verge in that. I don't like talking, making the commentary about the commentary. I would much rather be spending all my time just talking about random wacky gadgets and accessories and smart glasses and Bluetooth earbuds. Like, that's what I want to do. But increasingly, channels like mine get savaged by these popularity algorithms. So to have two of the largest channels on YouTube complaining about having to do embargoes, BS. Be it or walk away. If it's so distasteful and it's such a toll and it's so taxing and it's just so troubling, these trends, don't be a part of them. Walk away and redefine how you do business with those corporations and how you communicate those messages with your viewers. With much respect, look at a Gamer's Nexus. Look at a Hardware Unboxed. Clear the air, sure, but I don't see them engaged in those same problematic business practices, that they're just such victims of these embargoes. And oh, I'm just so victimized by giveaways. Not okay. Not okay. Like, do anything else. Go be happy. Go take the burden off of yourselves.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Doubt podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadoubt.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadoubt.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
So, I do want to highlight one other video here. Not one other video, one other post on the subreddit here. Because this is also kind of wrapped up in that same conversation. And I felt like this was pretty brave. I just lost it. I'm really good at doing podcasts and live streams. Okay, here it is. So this was the number 5. Let me screen share back over in here. The internal smaller YouTuber struggle. This is written up by user Yayo Shorty, but it's a very honest and vulnerable accounting of being a smaller producer on YouTube, of trying to build a channel, trying to play by the rules of working hard, and feeling alone in this endeavor, where even relationships with other YouTubers can sometimes feel like betrayals. And I don't want to try and break this down or summarize it or explain it. I'd hope that you would just go and read it, because this is very common right now. I keep lightly joking of the gallows humor that so many of us in the creator and review space are facing these existential crises. What are we? What do we do? Who are we talking to? And sometimes this feels incredibly lonely. And this write-up definitely speaks of that loneliness, that isolation, and how this is not as collaborative or as fulfilling an artistic conversation as it used to be. Or even from someone old like me, I miss the old Wild West days of YouTubery. And what we have now just feels so oppressive and suffocating for trying to craft fun conversations and broaden an audience. Like, I don't want to talk about one thing all the time. I want to share numerous experiences on a variety of topics. And that's what I enjoy in terms of the conversations that I have with my geek friends. And then to log into my YouTube channel and just see all the red arrows pointing down and YouTube scolding me. I need to be improving my watch time and I need to be getting more views, and people were less interested in this video, so we don't share it. We're not going to share your video with your subscribers. You need to make more popular things. And that kind of accounting can die in a fire from wacky thumbnails on. I'm not here for that. JJ, RIP Revision 3. It was Mevio. There was Blip. Oh, the classic days of Blip were awesome. That was like the main host that we had for Movies You May Have Missed, because we kept getting our videos pulled from YouTube for including copyrighted materials. Oh, that's too bad. And between Blip and Mevio and direct downloads on iTunes of all places, we were getting like 2.5-3 million streams and downloads a month. I mean, our traffic was incredible. And it's a show today that just vanished. It does not live anywhere seriously. You can find, I think, the first 30 episodes. We did 3 years of production on Movies You May Have Missed. I think the first 30 are up on archive, and I keep forgetting to upload more. But it's gross. So I've been in this for what? My very first like produced web video was in 2007. So I've been at this game for a little bit, and the fun of those early crazy, wacky, wild days where maybe you could make a popular streaming show off of a crappy laptop web camera are gone. Like, there is no easy way to get into this, which isn't like kind of mentally and financially taxing. Yeah, see, Dave, this is again kind of the feeling that I had. I've lost the comment in the chat. Hold on, I can pull it up on the Twitch and at least read it. It's really eye-opening how publicly traded collaborative platforms don't care about long tail and niche content. Like, think of all the amazing animation channels that are just gone. I remember all the little webtoons and stuff that I used to watch on the regular on the old internet, and like, I can't think of any that I'm really subscribed to now. So I do kind of want to just jump back through some of these comments here. Because again, it's something that I've brought up in the past. I especially kind of had my world rocked 3 degrees when that Reddit starter pack came out and all of the comments about how much tech reviewers suck kind of came out. Sorry, I'm like way behind on the chat, so I'm kind of catching up right now. From the Streamy Boys, their video was so annoying, they complained about the system, yet they perpetuate it, and on top of that, they kept the kid gloves on for their Apple critiques in the video. They battered OnePlus, though, but they are basically LG now, so no surprise there. And I feel like this is the point they're continuously reinforcing, because even in that video, what we see are two people addressing the concerns of their audiences. And their audiences are informed by a particular flavor of commentary and a certain collection of bias. So they're going to satisfy the confirmation bias of that community. And if you're from looking from the outside of that community, it's a different perspective than who they're talking to. So even in that video where they're trying to address these concerns and really trying to clear the air on their review process or what roadblocks and stumbles they run into, they're not talking to me. They're not clearing my concerns over this editorial style. They're addressing their audience's concerns, which again is shrinking. This audience of this flavor of tech enthusiasm is increasingly unprofitable for YouTube and is being treated as such through the YouTube algorithm. From Russ9123, Juan should have been the head PR of LG, and we might still see them releasing phones also folding tech in 2021. So I, full disclosure, right before the V60 launched, Marie and I were having some really hard conversations about what I want to do when I grow up. And on the list was start talking to LG about working their PR. And again, after LG pulled out of phones and I got a little bit more insight from some decently high-level executives at LG, me working at LG probably would have been really bad for me and for LG. Just whatever LG in South Korea wanted to institute as policy and for discussion on their products, the individual regional PR departments around the world were just never empowered to tell those stories. And for me, that would have been gutting. I mean, emotionally and mentally gutting to be such a fan and to utilize their products and to really enjoy what was unique about LG phones, and then being told, like, I don't know, go find like an influencer and just make like a video instead of like crafting a well-honed television campaign or billboards in strategic markets. It would have been like, no, we don't want to spend money. Just go like, I don't know, offer like an influencer $150 to make an earbuds video. Like, would have wrecked me emotionally. Mm-hmm. Aditya Anil, Jason is a madman. He went full on. Jason came out. Oh, yeah. Gary the Fireman just said that. I was going to say, Jason came out guns blazing. And literally Gary writes, Jason came out guns a-blazing. From Paul Purvey, are we saying that journalists have to purchase devices in order to review them? Isn't that coming from a position of privilege as well? I don't know that I can clearly delineate what the lines are. So, Paul, you've got me in a gotcha question, and I don't know what the right answer is. I feel like if the monetization and the success of your channel revolves on only highlighting that which is most search positive, and you have access to the company's products ahead of everybody else, when we know that that's going to be a rapidly expiring topic on a platform like YouTube, I think we've got bigger problems. So I think in terms of maintaining the highest degree of journalistic integrity, I think it is a conflict of interest to hinge the editorial on early access, embargo, pre-release, and being able to ride that hype train. And again, I will point to other outlets that I think manage a good balance of early access, embargo, and consistent scientific testing of those products on sites like Gamers Nexus and Hardware Unboxed, where they're very clear about when products fail. They are critically clear about how they receive and acquire those products, and more often than not are increasingly just buying the products to test the way that they would want to test instead of playing the games with embargoes. It's never 100% black or white. This is correct, this is incorrect, and here's the line in the sand. I think Hardware Unboxed has, over these last 2 years, have done an incredible job of calling into criticism the nature of the relationships between manufacturers and the people who create content on those products online. And so when we look at, they're still going to talk about a GPU, and they bought it, just to avoid the issues with doing business with that company's PR. They had an issue with a laptop, and so they tried to run their own modifications on it to verify the results of how they tested that laptop rather than only following the marketing bullet points from the manufacturer of that laptop. I feel like that's a step in the correct direction for how we should be interacting with these companies. And if they still want to hit up an outlet like that for early access, I think it speaks to the character of that PR. You know, we don't see that same kind of relationship in the phone space as frequently. Whether or not you're granted access, I mean, I can tell my Samsung stories all over again. Samsung is easily the most punitive PR team I've ever had the displeasure of working with. And why is that? Why are they like that? Because they can be, and they know that they can chill conversations and reduce the effectiveness of other channels by engaging in this type of ultra hype train, early access presentation. And they know that the conversation on their gadgets is already waned. The Z Flip and the Z Fold have barely made it to consumers. That topic is dying rapidly on YouTube. $2,000 folding phones. And it's insufficient to say, well, you know, some smaller channels, they can do the follow-up coverage, right? You know, they can spend the time to use the product for a couple months and then share their idea. Those videos will do a ridiculous fraction of the traffic that someone who got it early access. So no, I don't know what to say, Paul. I don't know where the journalistic line is, but I don't think it's through the disclosures that we just saw on two of the largest YouTubers doing tech videos on YouTube, talking about how they're just so grievously harmed by embargoes and giveaways, when they could easily, completely redefine the nature of their commentary and their relationships with those brands. And those brands would still aggressively try to hook them up. So it's a mess. I feel like that's about as close as I can get to summing up that topic. A question from Russ. Speaking of LG, how is your V60? What are your thoughts on getting a Wing in 2021? And hopefully they get Android 12 and 13. My V60 is still a tank. It is still the primary phone I reach for B-roll, for walk and talk vlogging. It's what I did most of my work on for my road trip, hooking it up with both the TCL glasses and the U-Perfect. I can't say enough nice things, especially when you know you can get that hardware for like under $400. I mean, you know that the software situation with an LG is always going to be kind of, but that is incredible hardware to throw at any discerning smartphone user for audio, for video, for content creation, production. It's still a beast at rendering 4K video. If you use PowerDirector, I don't know what special sauce LG put into their devices, but I feel like chipset generation to chipset generation, the V60 on PowerDirector can still hang with and often outperform Snapdragon 888s for video rendering and complex video editing. It really is great. The Wing is still really solid. It was my B-roll machine for a while, but I'm increasingly getting anxious about the hinge and dropping it and not being able to replace it. So the Wing is going to end up as more of a sort of a museum piece that I can always pull out. Like 5 years from now, I want to pull out a Wing and go, it wasn't this wacky. So I feel like that's going to be the where I kind of keep the Wing safe, and I'm really probably not going to be using it that hard anymore. Let me take another drink of water here. And from JJ, this is absolutely what I'm hoping we'll see from Pixel back in the space, is we need longer software support for these chips. We're in a chip shortage, for Pete's sake. Component shortage in general. I mean, every part of a phone is getting harder to source. So I completely agree. I went on this a lot longer than I really intended to. Remember, this is going to be sort of chill viewer Q&A. And there are some other like gadget block things to talk about. So I'm going to bump through some of these other stories. Final shout out. There was very interesting discussion taking place on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And the breakdown of videos that we got over the last week, videos, editorials, and on direct, you know, Reddit posts, was really interesting. And so again, it's my plea every week, check out the subreddit, but then participate. There are stories being told that I feel are a step outside the popularity algorithms, that absolutely deserve more attention, that help sustain these creators. And you're wondering why someone might stop producing videos, or they're facing burnout, or they're having to deal with a toxic community of trolls. These are the kinds of things that help keep people engaged and healthy on your platform so that you get the content that you would like to watch. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And let's kick over into the gadget block here, because this week is going to be Apple week. Today is not Apple Day, though, so I don't have Apple stuff to talk about. Like, I think we all kind of have a pretty good handle on what they might be releasing. But I did want to highlight, I will not be reviewing the Ray-Bans, the Ray-Ban Stories. So these are the first smart glasses from Ray-Ban, and they're being kind of built by Facebook. So first of all, I just don't like the look. I don't like this overly rounded interpretation of classic Ray-Ban frames. But then also, I just don't dig on Facebook, and I would prefer not giving them money for things that like have cameras and microphones attached to my skull. So I've got a write-up here, sort of an impressions from Engadget. And if you want more info on what these are like, you can check that out. But I'm also trying to get away from even showing my classic Ray-Bans in my videos. I want to support companies that don't have like monopolistic business practices on the industries that they build for. And so if I can step outside of the little consortium of glasses manufacturers that kind of owns everything, and at the same time avoid talking about a Facebook product, that's kind of a win-win for me. And I've been using my Vue Lite as my main sunglasses going out and about. And it's just kind of nice as a perk having open ear audio headset connection, With surprisingly decent microphones, the View Lite microphones were surprisingly good. Especially considering that I think the starter price for the sunglasses is like $150. So that's what I'm using for my smart glasses right now. And I'm hoping at some point we get something new that has a heads-up display like my Focals by North. Moving right along. As a quick adjoinder, another reason why I'm a little twitchy about Facebook ever being in a wearable technology space. This tweet here by Brian Merchant, simply incredible that all five of the, quote, third-party privacy and consumer groups Facebook said it consulted before rolling out its Ray-Ban AR camera glasses to ensure privacy was, quote, baked in from the start, are funded by Facebook. Every single one of them. All five privacy consumer groups are funded by Facebook to tell you about the privacy of a Facebook product. Take that information as you will. Moving right along. Apple event tomorrow. I don't know what they're going to announce, but there's a leak saying the iPhone 13 is going to finally drop the 64 gigabyte storage size. I'm sorry, it's 2021. iPhones have never had expandable storage. They've increasingly been shooting weightier and weightier photos and videos, and we're finally getting to a point where, you know, I don't think 64 gig is going to cut it. So there you go. Base model iPhone 13 likely not to have 64 gigs of storage. I am more encouraged that the rumor is also pointing to a 1 terabyte model. I feel like we've been long overdue phones with a terabyte of storage. If you're trying to tell us that 8K video might be a thing, or that 4K 60, 4K 120, but you're going to cap us at like 256 gigabytes of storage with no upgradability is silly. So I'm hoping Apple will finally drive that with a little bit better adoption. A terabyte storage option is kind of necessary in a world where iPhones might even shoot, what, ProRes? Okay, cool. I'm really glad they're finally getting on that storage density thing. I mean, again, for me, it's, I am hoping, I think my Xperia 1 might be showing up next week. So I'm hoping to be back on an actual consumer-facing retail unit Xperia 1 Mark III soon. And again, it's just silly to me to think about having 128 gigs of storage and no upgradability when a phone like the Xperia starts you off at twice that, and then also has SD card expansion. So, Gabaletta, I completely agree. 256 gigs of storage should be the standard. That should be the base model on any kind of premium phone these days. Absolutely agree. Another just quick news bite kind of a story. LG Chem. So this is kind of interesting to me because it's not LG Display. It's LG Chemical. Develops foldable display material using new material technologies that they say is significantly more durable than our current implementations of folding phone screen tech. And again, you know, while LG never really did get to materialize their second gen Explorer concept, it was a scrolling phone. The individual design and manufacturing arms of LG are formidable. LG OLEDs have improved in quality rapidly and significantly, and I think in many instances, like, they outperform what Samsung has been doing with AMOLED. I think what's also kind of interesting is LG Display, as just its own unique entity, its own unique property, has been ahead of the curve on wild technologies. I mean, transparent OLEDs, I saw those, I want to say now, almost like 6 or 7 years ago. That's how far ahead of the curve this tech is really being showcased compared to what we get in consumer hands. So if the LG Chemical division is saying they've got a new material and it's not ultra thin glass, which is kind of a lie from Samsung. It's like, we put in just enough silicate to say that it is glass, but we also put this really fancy new screen protector on your folding phone to make it more durable. I feel like that's not quite the truth. So I'll be curious to see if this really does improve the durability on folding and bending phones. Of course, the fact that the LG chemical division is talking about it means that it probably won't make it to real world products for a couple years. And why that's also kind of interesting is because folding phones are interesting and they're novel. They're wacky and new, but I still don't think they're anywhere near ready for the kind of mainstream adoption that Samsung would hope to see, you know? So when we look at TCL, this is an Android Authority story written up by John Callahan. TCL puts foldable phone plans on hold. Here's the phone that might have been. And they've got like a folding phone concept from TCL. TCL has done sort of Z Flip style concepts, scrollable concepts, duo style folds, triple folds, Z folds. I mean, I say Z fold as in like it actually makes a Z shape with three panels, not like Samsung's Z fold, which is only a V fold. You think about that, right? A Samsung foldable should be a V series phone. Not a Z, it's not three pieces, it's two. It's a V fold. It's the wrong name. Samsung is bad at making and naming products. hot take. Great write-up. TCL has shown off some of the most brilliant manufacturing concepts for these. So it's sad if they're not going to be kind of pushing to drive a consumer-facing product just yet. But it makes sense. You know, in a world of component shortages, TCL is a brand. I think they understand that they can't quite command top dollar. So they'd be making these devices at probably a loss to sell them to consumers until they can generate a healthier profit margin, a little bit more padding. Then it doesn't make any sense for them to try and wade into this market right now. And again, it's why I'm so critical. I want to see S Pen support in a Galaxy A series. I want to see, you know, DeX properly make its way into a Galaxy A52. I want to see, productivity enhancements make their way into cheaper and cheaper phones. If we're only going to deliver those types of solutions to the $1,000 plus tier, we're going to lose a lot of consumers along the way. From Russ, Apple invented it first with the iPhone 6. Folding phones, you jerks. I love it. I wanted to point out two new phones that are going to be coming out here, because you know, when we talk about our expectations on tech and you know what goes into manufacturing a phone and the margins that those phones are sold at, it is not difficult to put some incredible hardware in increasingly inexpensive devices or decreasingly expensive devices. I don't know how to say that. That was really clumsy. So what I was saying, I want to see, like, if I can see proper active pen stylus support in an LG Velvet, there is no reason for a Galaxy A72 to not have a digitizer that can use an S Pen. That's silly. And it's kind of restrictive. I mean, there's a reason why a tiny community of LG Stylo fans are diehard, hardcore Stylo fans. I mean, it's like it's a cheap phone with a stylus, a silo, so you can put the pen inside. A humongous battery on a really low power SoC so that that phone can run for like 3 days doing real basic stuff. It's really easy to grok why that phone has such a tiny sub community of ride or die Stylo fans. So, I got to recently play with the new mobile X6, which I think I'm going to give away. It's actually over there on my desk. It's like a $130 phone. It's Verizon. It's locked to Verizon, so it's going to have to be a USA giveaway. But it's an incredible amount of phone for $130. So next week on the podcast, there's your contest announcement. I'm going to give away my new mobile, my new X6 Pro, X6 Plus. Forgot the name of the phone. But I recently also got to play with an Infinix. And so Infinix is looking at putting out a new phone. And I just want to break this down real quick. Infinix is another low-cost international brand. Their new Infinix Zero X and X Pro. They're using a 108 megapixel camera sensor, which is a 1 over 1.52 inch sensor. So this is a little bit closer to the sensor size of the ultra wide on a OnePlus 9 Pro. So a 108 megapixel sensor with optical image stabilization. This is for the X Pro, sorry. And a 60 times zoom, a periscoping 8 megapixel camera sensor for the telescoping zoom. That is hardcore camera speckery right there. And it also has an ultra wide. So it's a proper three camera system. The 8 megapixel ultra wide isn't the bestest, but you know, if you're taking an ultra, ultra wide photo, it's kind of fine. Simon says, Hypno, the Infinix Note got good reviews. I reviewed the Infinix Note. It's surprisingly good phone. And again, in most markets, we were talking like sub $300, I want to say. So it's going to be powered, this Zero is going to be powered by a Helio G95, 120 hertz refresh rate on the display. The G95 is a decent chipset. It's going to be more than adequate for tackling beyond daily driver needs. So they're also using a 4,500 milliamp hour battery, but they aren't going to be doing. So they did a. Sorry, I'm kind of also reading through this article at the same time, just refreshing. Infinix showed off a 160 watt charging tech, but that's not going to be going into this phone. But yeah, it looks a lot like some of the premium like Honor, Huawei kinds of phones. Big old camera domino, a massive main camera sensor. We don't know what the pricing is going to be. I think this is saying pricing will be revealed separately for the various countries, but should be around the $300 mark. So what I'm assuming is the Zero X with the slightly smaller main camera sensor will probably start at $300. And then I'd be surprised if it's much more than $100 to start a Zero X Pro. That is crazy mid-ranger territory. That is smack dab in the middle mid-range. And you've got, you know, the lifestyle tech components that are competing against like Mi 11s. That 108 megapixel sensor, it is the slightly smaller 108 megapixel sensor, is still bigger than the sensor on an iPhone 12 Pro Max with pixel binning technology for better HDR processing. Holy cow. That is a lot of phone to start at around $300. So the other one that I think was kind of in that same boat.
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
I mean, again, even just for, you know, some of the compromise, oh no, it's only got 45-watt charging. Like, that's crazy. So the other one, I'm sorry, that last article that I was kind of referencing was coming from GSM Arena. Also kind of covered from GSM Arena. I think I'm going to try and get my hands on one of these because I've spent way too little time with some of the other BBK brands. Vivo just took the wraps off of the X70 Pro Plus. So this is their crown jewel Vivo. Snapdragon 888 Plus, Quad HD 120 Hertz AMOLED from Samsung with the LTPO panel that can drop to 1 Hertz to try and save power. And then just an insane collection of potential camera specs. This might be, I think, one of the main hardware competitors against something like the Pixel 6. Because I think we're going to see the same Samsung main camera sensor in here. But Vivo has been well ahead of the curve on the supplemental camera technologies like gimbal-style image stabilization. What I think is so funny. Okay, I need people to watch video reviews of things like the LG Wing or the Vivo X60. And you're like, wow, look at this image stabilization. It's so smooth. As they're like slowly walking on a sidewalk, right? If you've got gimbal style stabilization, that is like running through rocky terrain. When I take a Wing and I go hit the hiking trails and I jog them, the gimbal on the Wing is giving me almost steady walking stabilization with very little shimmer or digital artifacting. If you tuck your elbows and hold, where is it? Oh yeah, like a OnePlus 9. So a OnePlus 9 and you tuck your elbows and you roll your feet kind of like you're in a marching band, the image stabilization on this looks like you're on a Steadicam. It is amazing. But if I run on my OnePlus 9, forget about it. It's a juddery mess of that like low-level software-based image stabilization. So a gimbal mode is like the next tier of just like crazy active action cam kind of photography and video work. But anyway, the other thing that Vivo has been sort of promoting a lot, and this is why I think I need to grab one of these. The image sensor on here is just a hair bigger than the image sensor on a Note 20 Ultra or an S21 Ultra. It's one of these huge 1.3 inch camera sensors. And again, we're talking just a tiny hair bigger than what Samsung has as their top of the line. But they're making a big deal out of glass coating from Zeiss. So using glass elements, no plastic elements in their camera lens stack, and then also treating that glass to heavily reduce glare and flare and fringing. If you've ever shot on a Samsung Ultra and you're taking photos at night, if there are street lamps in your shots, you know that beautiful rainbow effect of huge light flares coming off of the reflections of those internal lens elements. They are aggressive and profound. Samsung still, I feel, have some of the worst flaring attributes. And we want to talk about it aesthetically like bokeh, but not just like, I see flares. Like, again, comparably, I think OnePlus actually does have better performance for light sources at night than what Samsung has been able to accomplish. But even the larger sensor on a OnePlus is still going to flare. It's not a question of if, but how. And if, is it ugly, or does it contribute to the look of your photos? Vivo is claiming that their flaring and their reflections internal are significantly lower and more aesthetically pleasing than what we would see on a Samsung. It's that one claim alone that has me significantly more interested in trying to pick one up. As we increase sensor size, it delivers perks for things like low light photography, but techies do a very poor job of balancing the compromises of going with a larger sensor. If your sensor is better at soaking up light and you don't have control over your aperture, your video in bright light is going to look way stutterier as you use a faster and faster and faster shutter speed to compensate for the sensor's ability to soak up light. That's a trade-off. That it's never just you only get benefits. There are also detriments when you change up the physical hardware. One of the other detriments that we've seen very often in a lot of these larger sensor phones are things like internal reflections, fringing, and flaring. So now I'm critically interested. This is a major part of their initial announcement, is the Zeiss coating on these lenses. Now I need to test that assertion. I'm way more excited, because to me that is one of the things that it's kind of a drawback. You get this amazing low light performance, but then you do have issues with certain night shots looking streaky or smeary or blown out. So now I need to see if I can get my hands on an X70. So the Vivo is going to be coming out. Snapdragon 888 Plus, it's a 5G phone. I think it looks reasonable. I mean, I don't think Vivo is known for being one of those aggressively ahead of the curve aesthetic companies. You know, this looks like kind of any other mainstream Oppo or OnePlus style device, but it's got all the kind of the proper bells and whistles that we would be looking for. I think what's kind of curious though is in light of the component shortage, the Pro Plus has, what is it? The Pro Plus uses the Snapdragon 888 Plus. The X70 Pro, I believe, uses an Exynos. And I think the lower level X70 uses a MediaTek. So even an organization as large as BBK is getting phones out the door in an even more sort of a segmented kind of way. The X70 does not appear to be a unified collection of hardware specs. Each individual phone is more specifically built for a category of users, going from a Dimensity to an Exynos to a Snapdragon. And that to me is just kind of interesting. Like, they're not trying to make it across the board one thing. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that next year. I'll be very surprised if a base model OnePlus uses the same internal bits, the same SoC, the same components as a more expensive OnePlus, because I just don't think there's any benefit for it. A OnePlus 10 could easily be using either last year's top of the line processor or a more mainstream mid-ranger processor, and no one would notice. So, Aditya is asking if I ever was able to import the Aquos. So no, I haven't been able to import an Aquos. Like I was saying earlier on, and looking at budgets and how I was going to be able to pay for one, and then not understanding like what the import taxes were going to look like, and it got to be kind of a mess. So I'm still sort of chatting with someone at Leica to hopefully get the Leica variant of that phone on a loaner. And it's not looking likely, but I haven't finished that conversation yet. So I'm going to try that first. If I can just get a couple weeks hands-on, I feel like that'll be enough. If not, then maybe as we get kind of closer to the end of the year, instead of buying an iPhone, we'll look at what funds we can set aside to do that Aquos instead. Because, oh boy, does that look like an incredible camera for a phone. So fingers crossed, because I would like to talk about that kind of stuff more frequently. So yeah, Vivo X70 Pro Plus Infinix with a 0X. I just, you know, kind of spent a little quality time with my SIM card in a Pixel 5a. I'm critically anxious to see what the Pixel 6 is going to do. There was another sort of leak or rumor that the SoC design on the Pixel 6 is going to be a step different than what we thought it was going to be. And I'll be curious to see how that plays out. At this point, it's just wait and see. You know, like I feel Google will take the wraps off of Pixel 6 soon. They just put out that teaser actually showing the phone in people's hands. So it's getting more and more real. I kind of feel like a Pixel 6 Pro and an Xperia 1 Mark III will likely end up being my big favorite showdown of the year. But I am going to be looking, like, I kind of feel there's something interesting in a conversation about an Xperia 1 Mark III versus a OnePlus 9 Pro. Talking about how do we call a phone a pro and how do we give consumers better tools to kind of get the power out of these phones. And I feel like Sony does not call their mainstream Xperia a pro, and they make a phone that's called a pro. And what Sony calls a pro is a fundamentally different conversation than what like a Vivo would call a pro. So I'll be really anxious to see how that goes down. I mean, the rumor for Tensor is that it's going to have two big X1 cores. And that makes me nervous for power, performance, and thermals. Because right now, every phone manufacturer is looking at ways to throttle the CPU on their devices. And Google might just come out there and be like, nah, put in a second bigger core. And that's crazy to me. So like I said, I'm really, really anxious to get my hands on a Pixel 6. I really do think like in a very traditional phone form factor, Google could be the most disruptive player in the Android space this year. So that could be kind of fun. Russ, yeah, hopefully the Tensor chips are better cooled. But yeah, there's only so much you can do in a phone cavity, that kind of surface area. And Aditya, yeah, exactly what I was saying. When Sony adds the Pro moniker, they mean Pro AF. Absolutely true. Yes, Simon says, "No, the Leica lights." That's the one I was thinking of. So I did some coverage on Leica gear like years ago, and so I mean, I still had some things to point to. I haven't done a whole lot, and I, you know, like even on like my camera lenses, some of, you know, this is a Sigma that I'm shooting on right now. But there was some initial interest, like, oh, hey, yeah, we could look into that. That would be kind of interesting. And now I don't know that it's going to happen, but, if I can get my hands on the Aquos or on the Leica, I would be all about that. All right. So, we're getting 7 minutes to the top of the hour, but I did want to do a little Q&A. I know we fielded someone's question in there. I'm sorry, I've already forgotten, talking about the LG V60. My SIM card at the moment is back in my OnePlus 9 because my OnePlus 9 Pro, which has like schmutz on the case, that's no good, is genuinely one of the better 5G performers in my current lineup of phones. And so this is what I used for the live stream with TK on Friday morning. So it's back in here. I'm not sure where to go next. I'm thinking, especially as like I play with an Xperia 1, obviously my SIM card's going to be in there for some reviewing and some testing, but I keep coming back to my LG V60. I did the photo shoot for my camera editorial because this had like automated voice commands for the shutter so that I could just take the photos by myself. It was over 100 degrees when I shot that photo and I was holding my Mi 11. And this phone was insanely hot, just capturing a couple of HDR photos, but it did it. No thermal throttling, no shutting off the camera. I mean, it was like uncomfortable to hold. It was running so hot in 100 degree weather. And I'm just like, again, consistently impressed with how last year's phones continue to offer more consistent performance. Let's see. Yeah, from Russ, you know, when a Sony Xperia has mini HDMI with headphone jack and micro SD card support, now that's a pro. It's also a $2,500 phone, but they mean it. They mean pro. Simon says, Hypno, this is going to be kind of interesting to keep an eye on. The 2200 Exynos seems like a beast, according to synthetic benchmarks, but who knows? So, hold on, let me take a quick drink of water here. It was a major part of the conversation when I was on with the guys from the Samsung DeX subreddit. Who here in this chat are using apps that they feel fundamentally the experience will improve if they had 20% more compute power? What apps are you using where that statement might be true? And I'm not trying to put this out there as a gotcha, because I genuinely do believe there are a number of apps that would benefit from more compute power. But I'm curious if anyone in this chat is using something on their phone right now, and a more recent phone within the last 3 years, Snapdragon 855 on. Hell, Snapdragon 845 on, where you're in the middle of using that app and you would genuinely get through your work more effectively with just compute power. And I'm curious what those apps might be for you. For me, to detail this all out while I wait for some replies, I point to things like photo editing, photo processing, video editing and rendering, and audio, because every generation where we've gotten more compute power in the past, that kind of sustained use has improved, except for the 888. The 888 has been a lot more squirrely about what apps really do function better and what apps instead thermal throttle. And you end up slower than if you had a less powerful chip. So when we see things like Simon says Hypno here is saying, like the 2200 Exynos, oh man, it's going to be a beast. Those synthetic benchmarks are a rapid burst of tiny little tests. The 888 and the current year Exynos are really good at spiking peak performance and then dropping back off again. Burst performance come back down. Burst performance come back down. So if you're looking at a collection of small little tests, those CPUs are already phenomenally good at those tiny little bursts. They are not as good in a passively cooled device for grabbing onto one application and performing one task at a consistent level over a longer period of time. And that's my concern. I don't need better spiky performance. I need better sustained performance. And right now, it's kind of a toss-up between an 865 and an 888. If it's mostly going to be video, I'd probably lean 865. And especially on an LG where my render times on PowerDirector are still better than most 888s. If it's going to be audio, I would probably go 888. Excuse me. Audio Evolution loves that extra processing power from the 888. So when you do your final mixdown on an 888, it is noticeably quicker than an 865. And that's how we got to break it down, app by app, in real world usage scenarios. So anytime that you catch like the audio feed from my podcasts, I've done the final mixdown on a phone now. Doing the final mixdown on a Snapdragon 888 with my little template in place, it's actually faster to mix that final MP3 than using my slightly older audio editing software on my Threadripper. My Threadripper with an incredible amount of RAM is slower at doing the final mixdown, which again is garbage quality MP3. I'm putting out like a 64 kilobit per second MP3 just to stay under my file size limits. It's faster on a OnePlus 9 than it is on a Threadripper. That's where we're at. Again, it's like you've got to be hyper specific now about the kind of work that you want to do. Hold on, let me take another drink. Yeah, but thanks for that, Simon. I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on new SoCs over this next year. Dave Burns. But the Geekbench on 2-2 scores. Or here, from Gabaletta. I can demonstrate how my Tab S6 runs games longer with better sustained performance than my Note 10 Plus because of thermals. And Aditya Anil, my Snapdragon 845 renders 4K clips with text and effects relatively fast. I can wait a couple of extra minutes. Gary the Fireman. Hey, that sounds like a Viagra commercial. This podcast, not sponsored by the Little Blue Pill. From Gabaletta, nothing, aside from video and photo editing, nothing really taxes the 855 aside from heavy, intensive games. Yeah, I'm trying to see photo editing programs. From Tiger Kim, the calculator app benefits greatly from that extra 20%. I can do my simple addition and subtraction milliseconds faster. Woohoo! Because this is what I find is frustrating. And again, I'm talking to the guys who are mods on the Samsung Dex subreddit, and we have been ridiculously overselling smartphone compute power for years now. I would say since the Snapdragon 845. For me, the 845 is the final transition over just how awful like the 810 was. The 820 was a good recovery. The 835 is a solid performer, but the 845 was something special. And from 845 to 55 to 65, those three generations of chipset were foregone conclusion across the board, better performers, better power management, like everything got better. And you could just take it for granted that going year over year, everything would perform better than the year before. And the 888 doesn't do that. And over those three generations of chipsets, tech reviewers got lazy. Again, you could just take it for granted. Oh yeah, I mean, I've got an 855 in here and it's better across the board than the 845. Yeah, this 865 is running everything great. Here's your Geekbench score. That's about all I really need to do. And it's just sort of generally true. Everything got better. 888 doesn't do that. And now you actually have to go in and do your homework to see where it's effective and where it's not. And I feel like over 3 years, a lot of tech reviewers forgot how to do that. I mean, again, you look at something like a Z Flip. The Z Flip 3 from Samsung should not be rocking a Snapdragon 888. I mean, in terms of power performance, in terms of radio management, the 888 is probably a bit more critical. You don't have the sort of separated modem components in the same way. It's probably easier to implement for radio design. But to that same token, I kind of feel some kind of Snapdragon mid-ranger is a better fit for what that phone is really designed to accomplish and would have radically improved battery life, which is the main complaint against the Z Flip 3. From Streamy Boys, 855 in my G8X works a treat. Just wish I could get Android 11 already. I'm still stuck on Android 10. Yeah, definitely going to be an issue with LG moving forward. Raymondit, sorry, but my V30 still rocks. You don't have to be sorry for that, Raymondit. V30, still a great phone, yo. 2 Turbo. I don't know why I went all necky on that. Dolphin emulator has been the only reason I want more powerful SoCs. For literally everything else, I want efficiency, not raw performance. That's a good point. I don't cover a lot of emulation because I'm trying to find those apps that, like, I want developers to really build me the Android versions. I don't want them to just kind of port lazily. So when I look at like a platformer like Dead Cells, runs incredibly well on mid-range or Android phones. Like, the game plays like butter. That's the kind of work I want to support. I want to highlight that. I want to call attention to it. And I want to say, like, this is a developer, buy their apps. They're doing really great work. But I totally understand, like, if you've got a catalog of games or ROMs and you're looking at an emulator. Like, for me, I guess the thing that I would compare that to would be, I bought a copy of Doom 3. So I have the Doom 3 files that I can run in a container on Android through Delta Touch. And Snapdragon 855 can play Doom 3 easily at 60 frames per second. And the game looks great. Like, it, the frame rate just, like, never drops. Like, I even did it on a Surface Duo. Like, it's just monster performance on an 855. So I think it's fine, you know? So I'd be curious, like, if there's some other kind of emulator or some type of other performance tier that's going to be necessary for, like, kind of the next generation of consoles to be emulated, what that would look like. from Russ, my S7 still feels kind of new, but the internal storage is what's holding it back. Absolutely. So Simon says, no, I'm giving Samsung credit if they have managed the heat displacement. I'm hoping they have, as it's the one after Tensor. I think Tensor will be a sneak peek at what's to come if that rumor about multiple X1 cores is true. And that's what makes me anxious. I mean, I feel like the X1 was designed around the idea of a die shrink, and that the smaller fabrication would balance that performance and thermal throttling, and I don't think that really came to pass. Some comments on Dex. From Gormlord, there's a new handheld, not a ham emulator, a handheld emulator coming out that runs on a Snapdragon 845. I feel an 845 with software designed specifically for just gaming emulation would be an incredible beast of a performer. If you're not running a generalized operating system with, you know, different layers of software development, and you could just dedicate the full power of an 845, the efficiency on that would be kind of amazing. And again, that's another part of the problem is I feel like if we were really doing our best work of efficiency for software, and especially for, like, entry-level phones, and making those phones run better on the lowest power SoCs that we could develop, that would be a huge net positive for these more powerful processors out there too. Gary the Fireman, a ham emulator would not be kosher. True story. All right, folks. I went rambly, and I know I kind of promised a little bit more Q&A. Maybe we can save that for next week's show, since we know the Apple chat is going to suck so much of the tech commentary, the air out of the tech commentary sails. That didn't work at all, what I just tried to say there. We can sort of, because I'll be almost an entire week removed on this podcast from talking about the Apple event next week. We can spend a little bit more time sort of catching up, maybe just keep it a little more of a casual chat, pajama chat. I mean, hell, maybe even break out, like, I'll play some Tetris or something. We can just hang and it'll be good times. But next week I am going to be giving away, let me go get it real quick. So I am on my wireless mic. I don't know why I didn't think to just stand up and go move around my office. So next week, I've got this all boxed up. This is the new mobile X6 Plus. This is the actual boxed unit that I did my review on. It's in near mint condition. It also has a very poorly applied screen protector just for transit and a little case that I'm going to be including with it. Retail on this is like $130. It is branded Verizon. Where is the label on this? Yeah, Verizon. Verizon Wireless right there. And next week we're going to give this away. So be on the lookout for how that might go down, but it will be live on next week's show. And I really want to thank everybody for Dave Burns. Juan Ramble? No. You nerd, you. I really thank everybody for jumping in on this chat. I'm always a little shaky coming back from taking a week off. So it's always kind of the fun of trying to do this live show when I don't quite have my momentum going. It doesn't take much to throw me off. So next week's show, I'll probably be back a bit more into the swing of things. But thank you so much for everybody who dropped by. Paul Purry, Fat Produce, Gary the Fireman, thank you so much. And everyone else who was supporting and participating, a part of the hype train, all of the subs and support. We got that new emote, Choo Choo. This is the best way for me to start my week. It actually felt kind of weird not having a podcast for Labor Day. And I did get to spend some quality time with family, but it was like, oh yeah, I would normally be chatting with a bunch of geeks about this kind of stuff. So, oh, Longenman, and another tier one sub to Toner 50. Thank you so much. Again, this is awesome. This is incredible. And thank you so much. And Simon says, "Hypno, that I'm a Verizon shell." Yeah, I'm giving away a phone that's only for Verizon. So, folks, plenty of big news coming out. The Apple event is tomorrow. I'm not going to have much to say about it, but for this week's podcast with TK, we're going to try and bring on a guest that's a little bit more Apple-focused so I can STFU and you can hear from someone else that I think is a bit more into the Apple ecosystem to better assess what this next announcement might be like. So be on the watch for this Thursday stream with TK, the best of our week. Again, I've got the links in the show notes and everything. You'll be able to catch up on all that. And I want you all to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I want to see everyone back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be safe. It's still really crazy out there, so keep your heads down. Don't take any unnecessary risks. Don't get hurt. And I hope to see you all back. Take care. I love y'all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.